Okay. Well, I think we can go ahead and start. So, to remind you, from Friday, we derived the momentum space action. And so, we're going to continue with our momentum space RG for the Gaussian model. But before I do that, I'm going to catch us up with some of the notation that we'll need to use, that you'll see in the notes. But to review, this is what we had, and this a squared was not dimensionless. It was some number, and we're going to use it to fix our dimensions in a moment. But we didn't really say what this number was yet. You know, beta is the inverse temperature, V is the volume, A is our spatial lattice distance, and then we have our momentum space fields, phi k. And so the first thing, this should be a beta k, it kind of looks like a beta x there. Oh, sorry, bk, not bx. And if you remember from a couple times back, bk we found to be this lambda constant plus this sum over the different directions in the momentum space, cosine k mu a. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to approximate it in this way. And then when you approximate it in this way, using the expansion for the cosine, you can also rewrite this first part. When you do a sum over mu, you will get d, where d is the number of dimensions you have. And so you've got 2j d plus lambda, and this should extend over everything. And that is our TC for the Gaussian model in particular. So I'm going to actually be using this TC constant throughout this, which is the TC for the Gaussian model. That doesn't mean that it's going to be the critical temperature when we look at phi-4 theory. In fact, we'll see what the critical temperature is relative to that. But just as a note, that's what I'm just using this TC label that we already derived last time for the Gaussian model. But we can also find that it's the same TC when we're looking at the renormalization group for the Gaussian model. And then we'll find something different for phi-4 theory. But I can write it in terms of beta c, because that's just 1 over k TC. So that's this term. And then using this expression, you can go further, because of course we have bk times 1 minus beta bk. And so then you can do a few lines, and you can write it in terms of this beta c. And the important thing here is I want things to have, like this phi k, to have the same type of dimensions as what you would see in a field theory and probably what you saw in the session right before this. You know, you had phi x, which had a particular dimension, phi k has a particular dimension. So I want this constant a squared to be such that when I multiply this stuff out, because I have a k squared in it, I want this to just be a k squared without all these other dimensions, you know, changing things. So that sets what I'm going to say my a is equal to. So this big a is equal to this quantity, this a to the d minus 2 over 2 divided by beta c j, because then when I multiply through by it squared, I'm just going to get a k squared by itself here. And then from there, I'm going to introduce some new variables, r, h, and u, that are going to make this momentum space action look much cleaner. So r is going to be a squared t over a to the d, or also in terms of what I'm saying that a is now equal to, that's going to be this reduced temperature over a squared j beta C. And then H, this little h, I'm just going to have it be equal to all of these things in front of phi 0. So that's beta A big H over A to the D, which you can also write in terms of this, in terms of this big A. And then finally, this U, I'm going to have it in terms of all of these constants that you have over here. And I'm actually going to include a 2 there in as well, because that'll allow me to write it back in terms of the 4 factorial. So I'm going to have 2 beta to the 4 a to the 4 over a to the d beta c to the 4. And you can also write this in terms of the big A. Beta C to the 6th. J squared. And then, well, one of the things that you've asked me about is, we have, remember, this originally came from an expansion of the log of the cosh. Where we expanded in powers of this beta a, b. And so one of the questions is, is there some small parameter so that doing this expansion makes sense? And the answer is, we are expanding in powers of beta a bk. And one of the things that we've done also as this simplification is for that these various powers of bk, we are replacing them all simply with b zeros, because they're higher powers. We can get away with this without losing important features. And this b zero is going to be the maximum value that you can get here, because this is when the cosine is equal to 1. And so if I write out what this beta a bk is with using the b0, I have beta a over beta c, which gives, and so if we are thinking about a finite temperature transition, well, the betas that we're going to be interested in are both finite types of numbers. And then this A, remember, we already defined as A to the D minus 2 over 2 over the square root of beta C J. So the point is, as long as A is small and the dimension is greater than 2 here, this expansion is going to make sense. We're going to have higher and higher powers of this A quantity that are going to get larger. And as long as A is small relative to our coupling J, because it's all about how we set our scales. So later on, I'm going to say A is equal to 1, but you know, A is, should be small. So the point is, then J is going to be much larger than that. Okay, so then with this in mind, the action that we're going to be thinking about from now on will be in terms of these R, H, and U parameters. So our partition function, and I'm going to leave out a lot of the constants that don't make a difference in terms of the singularity. So we have the momentum space partition function, and then the action in momentum space is 1 over 2 times the volume, the sum over k, and then I have r plus k squared. And so this first part, now you can see with the k squared, this is a kinetic sort of term. In position space, you'd see these derivatives. And then this is like a massive sort of piece, so it's like a Klein-Gordon theory. And then we have minus h phi 0 plus, this is the little h now, plus u over 4 factorial v cubed. And then all of these, but then I can just write phi k1, phi k2, phi k3, phi k4, delta k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4 need to be equal to 0. So this is what we'll be keeping in mind. Oh, this is a long one. Also box these because we'll want to remind ourselves of the meaning of these parameters. So as a reminder, this is reduced temp for Gaussian model. And the only reason why we've made a variable that looks like that right now is we have some insight from the exact solution of the Gaussian model on Friday. Maybe we didn't know that, and then we probably wouldn't make a parameter that looks like this. Yes?
What happened to the BK?
Yes. So the BKs, this is another approximation. I've replaced them by all by B zeros. So they're all the same number all of the time.
In U.
Yes, they are all in U, exactly. Any other questions about this setup? Okay, so let's think about the RG procedure. In position space, when we were looking at that a week ago, we rewrote, especially for, yeah, well, for both cases, we rewrote the actions using a coarser spatial grid. And tried to get a new action that looked like the old one. So we had this idea of some grid. And let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then going to something that had like 2 by 2 sites instead. And this was in space. And the thing is, even with momentum space, that's what we're going to be thinking about. What's happening in position space? How do we get a coarser grid? And then what is the result of that in momentum space? So when we introduced momentum space on Wednesday, we saw that for lattice spacing A, so if I have some lattice spacing of A here, the maximum momentum in any direction is pi over a. And so you have a cutoff, a natural cutoff when you have a lattice. Your momentum can't get any larger than this pi over a value. So this means for a bigger lattice spacing, for bigger lattice spacing, I'm going to say b over a, oh sorry, b greater than a. So let's say that this lattice that's coarser now has a lattice spacing of b. What's the maximum momentum in that case? Yes. The maximum momentum for that larger spacing is going to be pi over b. And the key is that is less than the original maximum momentum that we could have, pi over a. So then the idea is so what if we integrate out so we have our original thing with the lattice spacing A that went all the way up to pi over a. So what if we took that action, but then we integrated out higher momentum, momentum that is greater than pi over b, and then see what we're left with? And then the question is again, can we get an action that looks like what we began with, looks like the original? And so you see, it really is the same idea of coarse graining in position space, but instead from the perspective of momentum space. And momentum space has this nice feature that if you want to look at a coarse grained position space, then that's really only that's really accomplished by looking at the momentum up to a smaller amount than the original range of momenta that you looked at. Any questions about the general idea here? I know you probably saw something very similar to this in the lecture before, so, but it doesn't hurt to keep thinking about this. Okay, so let's make this precise for the Gaussian model. So first, we are going to split up phi into fast and slow modes. So we're going to define a new set of variables, phi k plus and phi k minus, where phi k plus is simply phi k if all of the components are greater than, or with if any of the components are greater than the cutoff. And really just, so this is the magnitude of k. And then in this case, we're going to have zero, I'll list it in this way so I can say otherwise, phi k, if the magnitude of it is less than cutoff over b, zero otherwise, where b is greater than a, which I'm going to say is equal to 1. And so phi k is equal to phi k plus phi k minus. And if we're thinking about in momentum space, basically you could have something that has a radius of the cutoff over b or pi over, and I didn't define, whoops, okay. And so then also this cutoff is pi over a. That's the important thing. Okay. And so then the question is, does your point exist inside of this sphere or outside of it? Because this sphere is like the new range of allowed momenta if you have a bigger lattice spacing, B. So then if we look at the Gaussian action, we have the integral to the original cutoff, that's our pi over a dn phi e to the minus s of phi, and that is equal to, we can rewrite this in terms of the integrands of d phi minus as well as d phi plus, well really of the non-zero ones of these, and then we can write this as e to the minus s, which is going to be in terms of phi minus and phi plus. And the idea is we want to be able to make this in terms of a new action, S prime. Now, the thing with the Gaussian model is we have this simplification, you know, which is also related to why we're able to solve it exactly. And it also makes RG easier for it, because we have, if we look at this action up here, you see that the phi 4 term is going to mix different momenta with each other. We have phi k 1, phi k 2, phi k 3, phi k 4. And so we're going to have phi pluses and phi minuses in products together with each other. But for the Gaussian part alone, all the terms are for just one particular momentum. We have phi k squared, so it's phi k with itself. So that means that for the Gaussian model in particular, we have that S of phi minus plus phi plus can just be written as S in terms of phi minus plus this S function in terms of phi plus. And so this is something special about the Gaussian model, which makes everything easier. Okay, so that means that we can write, you know, say that I'm looking for some integral, you know, or something that will go as something over my lambda over b times dn of phi minus e to the minus s prime phi minus. Because that's the sort of thing, you know, we want to be able to get. And we can get that quite easily for the Gaussian model, because we can say that this is equal to e to the minus s of phi minus. Or at least, I should keep that. Times the integral up to this. Well, this is going to be a different integral over. Right, so we could just, all I've done here is I've factored them further because we can split up S into the two pieces. And so then if we think about that, let's go ahead and put it over here. So if we remind ourselves what S plus is, or S of phi plus, that is, S of phi plus is 1 over 2v times the sum of k such that its momentum is outside of that sphere. And then I have r plus, and then I'm going to write this sum over mu, k mu squared. By k plus squared. This is a Gaussian, and so we can integrate this part pretty easily. And so what we're going to get is that e to the minus s prime of phi minus is just equal to e to the minus s of phi minus. We haven't integrated that part, but we will integrate over e to the minus s phi plus. And when we do that, we're just going to get the product of k's that are outside of that sphere And then the integral is just the Gaussian integral 2v pi over r plus k squared. And so notice, since I could write this action originally just as a sum of the same action in terms of both of these variables, s prime ends up looking just like s, because I've got some extra prefactors here that came from integrating out phi plus, but then the remaining thing is already in the form of an action. And so that's why this step is really trivial for the Gaussian model versus models that will involve mixing the slow and the fast modes. Any questions about that?
Sorry, what is this prime?
Yeah, so this is, we want to be able to, I think I wrote S prime, we want to take this original thing and write it as something proportional. We could have different prefactors, but in terms of a new action, S prime, that involves only these slow modes, only these momenta that are below that new cutoff after coarse graining. And the point is that because this action is just a sum over the actions of the slow modes and the fast modes, then we can keep this part as is. We're going to integrate over it too, but it looks like an action already. And then we can go ahead and integrate over the fast modes. It's a Gaussian, so we just get this result. And so then that leaves us with something that we can call our, So I'm saying E, the, because I said there might be prefactors. I wasn't concluding the prefactors. Yeah, so I should say this goes as that, because these are like the prefactors that would be involved. So actually, S prime of phi minus is just going to be S of phi minus in this case. So this is why it's so simple for the Gaussian model. So then our z is just equal to k such that k mu is greater than this. And then I have a product over 2 pi v over r squared plus k squared. And then I'm still going to have when I wrote that action up there, I have 1 over pi v n over 2. So I'm still going to have the pieces that, yeah, I'm also going to have this product. And I could include it here because these are just for all the k's. So I'm going to have the square root of pi v. Because these are the pieces from the fast modes that I don't want to think of as belonging to the original partition function. And then I still have the product, then I still have the 1 over pi v to the n over 2. Now, how do I want to write this? So I have n over 2, but I now have pieces that belong, that I'm going to separate out as belonging to the slow modes and the fast modes. So I'm going to say 1 over the square root of pi v. Those are the fast modes. And then I'm also going to have a product of k such that this is within that sphere of 1 over the square root of pi v. And then I'm going to have my integral over the slow modes. And that should be correct, but I've gone ahead and separated out that product into the pieces that belong to the fast modes and the slow modes, because that'll be important to keep track of. Because ultimately, we want to think of the partition function for rescaled values and what they are in terms of the original values. So that's the second step. Okay, so we want this S prime, which in this case is actually just S of phi minus, to resemble S. So we are integrating now. Only to the cutoff over B. Rescaling updates variables so we integrate to the original cutoff again. And so we need to think about how each of our numbers change. So the first thing is if we think of n, which are the number of lattice sites. Well, if we go from a lattice spacing A to a lattice spacing of B, which is bigger, are we going to have more or less lattice sites?
Yes.
Yeah. So we had a certain number of lattice sites. We make all of these, if I'm thinking of 3D boxes, bigger, then we have fewer of them. So this new n prime is equal to the old n, but divided by this new b to the d volume. So that's our new number of lattice sites. And so very similar logic, that means that v prime, which is the volume, that's just n times a to the d, that is going to also rescale in exactly the same way. And then now we need a new k prime. And we said that when we took our k, and now we're only doing the slow modes, we're saying that our k, which was in terms of our old k, k only went up to the cutoff over b. We now want it to go all the way up to the cutoff over a again. So we can do that if we let k prime equal b times k. We're just taking all our k's and making them bigger, because that will allow them to go up to the bigger cutoff at that point. So I find this one a little bit trickier conceptually to think about, so I'm going to just say a few more words here. Take these smaller momenta, because these are the slow modes momenta. And make them bigger. To go up to the original cutoff lambda. And we have no more fast modes in rescaled system. So you could think about it, if we think about the momenta we originally had, let's say we had, and I'm just thinking about in one direction here. So the momenta could go from zero to gamma. And then what we did, it's not gamma, big lambda, that's right. We got rid of all of the momenta that were larger than gamma over b. So we're only using these. And so then the idea is, if we have these, let's say, I mean, they are only discrete values. So let's say we have 1, 2, 3, 4 of them. What we're doing basically is they're just stretching them out. You could think of it as being 1, 2, 3, 4. So it's like these four that were more compressed here, we multiply them by this scaling factor B, and we stretch those same four out to go up to the original cutoff that we had. And then finally, we got to rescale our field. And phi k prime, we're going to say that it's some number z phi k. And we have to figure out what this z is actually going to be by looking at what our partition function will look at, what will look like. Any questions here? So when we put everything in, our S of the slow modes is going to look like, well, we have our volume V prime that was related to V. So I'm going to replace the V with V prime over B to the D. So that is going to be B to the D over. I wrote it as B to the minus D on my notes, but that doesn't look right. So K prime R plus. And then I have k prime squared, but I originally had k squared. And so this should be, yeah, b to the minus 2 k prime squared. Same for the scaling phi. I should get z to the minus 2 phi k prime minus squared. And then minus hz to the minus 1 phi naught. And then the point is we want to make this coefficient of k prime squared to be equal to 1. So we have b to the d. B to the minus 2 z to the minus. Did I mess something up here? Could somebody check the notes on this? Does it say b to the d or b to the minus d? Sense. Okay, so. Right, because this should be b to the d times n prime, or If I want to put it the other way, it should be b to the minus d. Yeah, I just messed that up when I was looking at it here. Okay. So yeah, this should be b to the minus d. Okay. And then we can solve for z. So z is equal to b to the minus d plus 2 over 2. And then, like I said, we have this thing. We can rewrite these prefactors in terms of the v prime variables and whatnot. And after we do that, what we're going to get is that z of the old n, r, and h is equal to, first of all, we're going to have that piece where we have still k mu. These are the fast mode pieces. So I have the square root of 2 still over the square root of r plus k squared. And then I'm going to get a z to the minus n prime. And then I'm also going to get a b to the minus d n prime over 2. And this piece comes from these over here. And this is b to the n prime. So I get all these prefactors, but then I get z. And now instead of n, I have n prime. Instead of r, I have r times b to the minus d times z to the minus 2. And that just comes from here. You see that this looks the same, except r is now multiplied by b to the minus d, and r is multiplied by z to the minus 2. And then what happens to h? Looking at this action, how did h change in its scaling? Just looking at this rescaled action in terms of the prime variables. So this is going to look very similar to this, what's right next to it. We see an h phi 0, and we see an h phi 0. But what's different in the rescaled version? And I should have used primes for all of these. The z inverse factor. So that means h is going to be replaced by h z inverse. And so you can write the partition function, the original partition function, in terms of something that's exactly the same function. These z's are the same functions, but you replace each of these original things by this n prime, which I could go ahead and call, you know, n over b to the d. In fact, let me go ahead and simplify these at this point, because we know what n prime is, and we know what z is. So n prime is just n times b to the minus d. This piece simplifies to r times b squared. And this piece simplifies to h times b to the d plus 2 divided by 2. And so you can see now, we can get our renormalization group transformations, our RGTs, because we see with each renormalization step, how does R change and how does H change? How do these different couplings change? Now, is everyone clear on how I got R, how R changed? Does somebody want to explain how I got how R changed? Because you want to compare the R that you had here, which this R just had a prefactor of 1 over 2V. But the R over here has a prefactor of 1 over 2V prime. That's fine, because I'm saying N goes to M prime. But it also has B to the minus D. And it also has Z to the minus 2 multiplied by it. So that means that this R is going to be go to R times B to the minus D times Z to the minus 2. So I'm quickly going to give you a couple of things then from this theory. In fact, maybe I'll just put them on this board in the back. Okay, so we have then that if we do an RG transformation of R, that gives you RB squared. Or in some of the notation we recognize from earlier this time, you'd say R prime is equal to RB squared. You know, you do one renormalization group flow, basically the transformation, and R goes to RB squared. So for a fixed point, we get something that we knew we would get. Basically, you want R to be equal to RB squared. When is this true for some generic B? Yeah, so that tells us R equals 0. But what is R? Well, R is just related to our Gaussian reduced temperature. So that means we have a fixed point at the Gaussian model's reduced temperature. And so, you know, that's the same thing that had the TC equal to lambda plus 2J D over K. And then you're in your notes, there are a couple of examples for critical exponents. What I will do is I'll give you, from this partition function, you want to do the same sort of idea to calculate the free energy and to be able to put a new free energy per site in terms of an old free energy per site. And so you can do that, and what you will get for the free energy per site is that the free energy for the old parameters is equal to B to the minus D times the free energy for these rescaled parameters. And then you get some extra pieces. And these came from the prefactors that are new. And we've also got that product over these fast mode ones greater than the new cutoff times the square root of R plus squared over 2. And so, let me close parentheses here. The point is you can express the original free energy in terms of the same free energy function as before, but with the rescaled parameters. And so then if you want to get critical exponents, I'll do the easy one, because this chi, the susceptibility, is the second derivative with respect to h, which also goes as the second derivative of the free energy with respect to this new little h that we were looking at. And then, which terms here have an h dependence? This is our external magnetic field that we use to get that susceptibility critical exponent. So we have three terms here. One is, you know, the free energy function, and then these others are the prefactors. And which terms actually have a little h dependence in them? Yeah, just the first one. So in your notes, you'll also see getting this specific heat where you have to do a second derivative with respect to t. And so then you have to actually, you'll replace this product. You can replace it by an integral over the log. And you can do that sort of thing. But just to show you the main idea, you're going to have that d squared f dh squared equals, and so then if I take a derivative with respect to this thing, well, only one of these variables is going to be affected. We're going to use the chain rule. So we take the derivative of f, and then this with respect to h gives me a factor of b times d plus 2 over 2. Then I can do it again, and I'm just going to get another one of these factors. So I'm going to get b to the minus d times this function of nb minus d rb squared hb to the d plus 2 over 2. And then I'm going to get two of these. So I have b to the d plus 2. And then the d's cancel, and so I get b squared times the rescale. This should be the second derivative. So then this should be still the second derivative. B squared times the second derivative of this function with the rescaled variables. Okay. So then b is some arbitrary scaling factor. So this should work no matter what b actually is. So let's just assume and just look at the case where this scaling relation between this initial side and the final side looks simple. So I'm going to assume that r times b squared is equal to 1. Okay, then at h equals 0, because that's where we get criticality, we're going to have that the derivative of f with respect to h, the second derivative, at n, and then r, and then h equals 0, is equal to b squared times this second derivative with respect to h of this first piece, nb to the minus d, 1 and 0. And so then the point is, we have something that varies in this r variable. And then we have that this b squared, we can replace it with 1 over r. And then this piece is now a constant, because we have 1 here, we have this 0, and we have this number. And so from here, we get that chi simply goes as 1 over r. And so that's how you can extract this exponent from there. And so there's no need to compute z at all, and we get these exponents from it, from this renormalization group. Okay, this is probably a good time to take a break before moving on, and I'm happy to take questions on this.
Mm-hmm. So that's second derivative with respect to h or h prime for chi.
Right. So I've already written the rescaled h here, so it is with respect to h.
So
here.
So then the other derivative, right, in the second one should be with respect to h prime, because you're doing like a chain rule. Right?
So this is with respect to h still. So I know that the original quantity, that I can get the susceptibility from the derivative with respect to the original h. And I know that this original f is equal to this rescaled f plus all these constants. And I know what the rescaled f, it also is in terms of the original h. So I can just take the derivative of this side with respect to the original h and get what the result is going to be.
I'm just even confused, like, mm-hmm. in terms of h and h prime, because at some point here you take a derivative with respect to h prime. Because if you don't, then you have, you're basically saying that b squared is equal to 1.
If I take the derivative with respect to, say again, why do I need to take a derivative with respect to h prime?
So at some point, either here or here is h prime.
Why is that?
So, and I think that it's here because here you're using the chain rule, right? Like you're differentiating this part,
mm-hmm.
so you're doing like d over dh prime.
Well, no, but I have a function that's in terms of h, not in terms of h prime. Remember, I rescaled, I got new variables of phi and k, phi prime and k prime. But I've written this function in terms of the original, just h and r.
Mm-hmm. If this is h and this is h,
uh-huh.
can you cancel them?
Well, they're derivatives, right?
Yeah, but they're still non-zero, right? So I can cancel this function, and I can just get the b squared equal to 1. So I'm saying, like, I think that here what you're doing is, like, you're taking a derivative with respect to this whole thing. I'm changing my variable, and this is my own.
Oh, well, good. The left-hand side has a different, it doesn't depend.
Yeah, the left-hand side, I think this is what's confusing. I didn't bother to put in, this is a different function. Sorry, yeah. I think this is what's confusing you. I'm taking this piece on this side and this piece on that side. I'm taking the derivative of the original NRH on this side, and I'm taking the derivative of, I see. Yeah, I think that's what's confusing you. Yeah. Yeah. It's a function of different variables. Yeah. Yeah, let me rewrite that, because that I was trying to be quick, but I think it's very confusing when we're thinking about these scaling relations.
So, in that substitution value, you start with h prime.
Yes.
Doesn't that still be outside the better part, right? Thermodynamically, but the law is not.
So the right-hand side is dependent on R.
And then the first argument is n times b to the power of minus d, right?
N times b to, sorry, n times b to the minus b. Yeah, I think so. You want to think for one fixed lattice, what are you changing? If you're changing R there, then yeah, it's how does R go? So yeah, I would say I would view this as fixed relative to that. But yeah, I see what you're saying with that.
You can treat the whole thing as constant if you say n goes to
three. So imagine you've got an infinite lattice. You do this B rescaling, you still have an infinite lattice. And then
it's the same function.
This first expression you wrote between the free energy and the rescaled free energy. Essentially the scaling hypothesis.
You rescale to
the
Exactly. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Then I just take the derivative of both sides of this equation with respect to H.
Stop.
Like, just
Okay, any more questions related to this stuff before I move on?
I have a main question. So, the field I, we started from just vector pi, and
yes.
I wonder when we took the continuum limit to pi.
To phi zero?
No, I think in that, for the partition function, I think we are assuming phi as a function, not a, like a vector. So I was wondering.
Oh, so phi is still, okay, well, phi is a scalar field, but k is still discrete here, if that was your question. Now, maybe I wrote it in terms of, I think it still is a, I wrote it still as a product of things. Now, you can do a continuum limit version of this. In fact, that'll be something in your tutorial this afternoon about the continuum version of this continuous space, and then they'll give you continuous momentum.
Okay.
But I think that everything should still be discrete for this model.
Okay.
Now the fields themselves, I mean, I guess that's the confusing thing. The fields themselves can take continuous values, right? Because you're going to integrate those over, you know, zero to infinity. But so that's the field value. Now, the field index, however, this k index is discrete. Okay, so now we're going to take a bit of a break after seeing the concrete stuff to look at a more general formalism and to see how in more complicated situations we can really analyze these fixed points and get critical exponents. So better understanding of how to get RG fixed points and critical exponents. And so to do that, we are going to get a little bit more abstract. We're going to assume some parameters for a model. So we're going to assume these parameters. Some group of what are basically couplings. Big K, where we have a K1, K2, and so on. So for example, the Gaussian model, these would be R and H. And then for 5 to the 4, these would just be R, H, and U. And so what we're thinking about is what we can do and what we know about these parameters. So after momentum space, RGT, we have something that looks like the partition function of n particles, and these k couplings is proportional to some partition function, the same partition function of n prime and some rescaled couplings. And so this is just like how we took R and R became RB squared. And then H became HB to the D plus 2 over 2. So that's what K squared is. And so this, you know, is going to be some new partition function that's rescaled variables. And And so then we can say that K prime is the RG transformation, and we're going to assume some B rescaling factor of the original K. N prime is always going to be N times B to the minus D. And then phi K prime, phi prime K prime is going to be Z phi of some original K over B. Because remember, we said that K prime is equal to, this is how we scaled things. Sorry, original K prime, that looked wrong. Okay, yes. So because K is equal to K prime over B. And so fixed points. We can use star to represent fixed points. And so a fixed point is when you do a renormalization group transformation of a point, and then you get the same thing back. And so if you want to, so what we're going to do is we're going to learn something a bit more about are these couplings the best way to learn about this system, or are there other ways to look at it that are going to be more illuminating? So if we linearize near the fixed points, we can write that K prime, let's just say for some coupling, K prime I near the fixed point, we can linearize it and get approximately the fixed point plus some sum over J times some matrix IJ B of KJ minus KJ star, where this MIJ is just derivative of K prime I with respect to KJ. And I sort of ran out of room here, so I'm going to continue. Or you would say you can understand this by putting these pieces on this side and thinking about this as like a delta K I prime, or delta K prime is approximately the sum over J M I J B, and then we have K J minus K J star, and this is like a delta K, and then this matrix is just, you know, a delta K prime over delta K. And so you see how this would be the case when you linearize it. And so what we're really interested in is this matrix MIJ. So we can write this as delta K prime is equal to M of B. So this is something, some matrix that's dependent on the rescaling factor that would relate your K and your K prime to each other. And so we have a vector and a matrix and a vector. And so In fact, I'll just kind of separate this out and then start over here now. So if M, this way of relating the K values to the K prime values, is diagonalizable, then we can say we have these eigenvectors, then some set of independent eigenvectors, VA, yeah, and let's assume all the eigenvalues are different, is equal to lambda A of B times VA. And so now we've introduced some eigenvalues. And instead of the original couplings, we'd be thinking about some sort of combination of couplings where M would be diagonal in them. And then we'd have some eigenvalues then that are associated with our rescaling factor B. And you know, if we had three couplings, there would be three eigenvalues here. If there were two couplings, there'd be two eigenvalues, and so on. So RG transformations, and so you may have seen this in the earlier lecture, but one of the places where group comes from when they talk about renormalization group is that these transformations actually form a semigroup. So it's not even a group. I think this is one of the more confusing names of something in physics. But basically, if you have one transformation that's based on MB1 and another transformation that's based on a different B2, that's the same as doing a single transformation that's a product of the B1 and the B2 scales. And so that's why it's called a semigroup. You have properties like this, but it's also the case that because of that, you know, you could flip these around and you find that these values will commute with each other, right? So you can also say that this is equal to B2 B1, which is equal to MB2 MB1. But it's a semigroup because this is something that we don't really have an inverse for. We can't undo what we've done. We do a coarse graining and we lose information, at least in the general case where we are writing approximations of new things. Perhaps with the Gaussian model, we could redo it because we always have the same information that we had before. But in general, there's no inverse, so that's why it's a semigroup instead of a group. So because of this commutation, well, it's just like what you see in quantum mechanics. When you have these commuting observables, you can diagonalize them both using the same matrix, and you can get the eigenvalues for them. So we can simultaneously diagonalize MB matrices. And what we get is that if we're looking at the lambdas, lambda A, let's say, of B1 times lambda A for B2. So, you know, for this same linearized coupling, you get simply that these are equal to lambda A of the transformation B1 and B1, B2 as a group. Okay, and I have a little bit more space here. About that. Okay, so we have lambda A B1 times lambda A B2 equals lambda A B1 B2. And you can spend some time thinking about this, you know, what types of functions that would have this property. But basically, the way that you would get this property is that this lambda a b1 is going to be a function where it's just b1 to some power, power ya, some power dependent on which eigenvalue you have. Because if you have b1 ya, b2 ya, you definitely will get b1, b2 to the ya. So I'm just going to say works for this. And I'm not going to prove it or be that precise. But the point is, this works for this. This is really the way, as far as I know, the only reasonable way it works. And so because of this, let me go ahead and move on to a different board then. So let's remember our eigenvalues, our eigenvectors. And like I said, let's assume independent eigenvalues. So we have these independent eigenvectors that form a basis. That means that we can write our original vectors in terms of these vectors that would diagonalize the matrix. So we have our delta k. You know, when we were looking at our matrix right here, delta k and delta k prime, we could write this one as some sum with coefficients of the VA vectors. And then we could write delta k prime as some t prime, you know, some scaled type of thing of those same VA vectors. And TA and T prime A are called scaling fields. And so the point is, in this basis, the RGT is simpler. And so this will allow us to learn more things by putting it in this basis. And so we can do that. We can take these guys, we can put these into this equation, and M acting on all those vectors is going to give us these lambdas, right? And so If I star this equation, so putting these two with star, you know, just putting them in, so we have that the T prime A scaling field is equal to B to the YA times the original scaling field. So, you know, we're also going to use these expressions for the lambdas. So this is very useful for us because it allows us to say, it allows us to write the RGT very simply. Because remember, that was really a trick we used, even going back to the 1D Ising model. We wanted to write it in some simple way using the hyperbolic tangent. So in this case, we can say that the RGT of all these fields is equal to just b to the y1 of the first one times t1, b to the y2, t2, and so on. And so we see that the sine of YA is very important here. Because once we have this useful basis of scaling fields, and we've calculated these Y1s, Y2s, etc., we find that a scaling field is either relevant, irrelevant, or marginal. So it is relevant if YA is greater than zero. And so then TA prime or TA is going to increase as B increases, so that coupling will become more and more important. Or, so does anyone have a guess? What is irrelevant going to mean? Yeah, exactly. So if YA is less than zero, then those are just going to go to zero. So they're just, they're not going to actually affect the universal behavior. And then it is marginal if YA equals zero. And that basically means it's inconclusive according to our linear approximation analysis. So we don't know. We need to go beyond linear to understand. I'll keep this higher to make sure everybody can see it. And I'm out of time. I'm not going to go over too much. Yeah, I'm not going to go over the rest of the notes in this session, but I am going to note a couple of key results that will be important for tomorrow. So correlation functions and critical exponents. And basically what we want to know is how are these YAs related to the critical exponents and the correlation functions. And basically what we can show is that if T1 is the only relevant parameter or relevant scaling field, so we have that Y1 is greater than zero, but all of the other ones are less than zero. We can interpret T1 as the reduced temperature and we can show basically that the correlation length will go as 1 over T1 to the 1 over Y1. And you can get the details for this in your notes, so that nu is equal to 1 over Y1. And then we can also get that the correlation function involving some distance x, which I can write as xi minus xj. So this is assuming some system that has translational symmetry in it. And then T1, T2, etc. is going to go as x to the 2 minus d minus eta. And so then that's how we can get the critical exponent. Yeah. Okay. And I think that's it for today.